Welcome to Perspectives, brought to you by Physicians Practice. I'm Drew Boxler, editor of Physicians Practice. Every 2 weeks, we explore key areas of a successful, thriving, independent practice. We'll hear from experts in the industry regarding best practices for billing and collections, answer your top coding questions, analyze current legal trends, malpractice landmines to avoid, and look at the hottest tech innovations to increase productivity and enhance the patient experience. Let's get started. Happy holidays, everyone. As you recline into your various festivities, feasts, and celebrations, business should be far from your mind. But healthcare does not take such breaks. And that is why we wanted to bring you our conversation with Elizabeth Woodcock, founder and principal of Woodcock & Associates. A little fun fact about this special guest, she was actually the director of knowledge management at Physicians Practice from 2003 to 2004. Our contemporary Pearls writers are a direct result of her work. She originally christened our newsletter Pearls, and that title has lived on, though migrated to our regular expert contributors. Earlier this year, Elizabeth joined me to answer some questions about telemedicine. Then, the concept was fresh, as most practices were attempting to understand and implement these strategies while simultaneously treating patients through these platforms. We began by discussing whether or not it is too late for practices to begin setting up those services.
Great question of the day. And the answer is actually absolutely not. In fact, I've worked with physicians who've been up and running literally within hours. Now, I know, a decade, maybe even a year ago, the technology interface was not particularly user-friendly. And, you know, there weren't great features, but now there are. And prices are actually ranging from totally free to monthly subscriptions that are start at $20 to several hundred dollars. And, you know, it's interesting. After we spent a few years kind of all getting EHR systems, which were very, very expensive, this one is a fraction of that cost.
Good, good. Even for you listening to this podcast right now, whenever right now might be, it's not too late to begin setting up these services. The next question is, how do you get started quickly?
Well, I like to go to the horse's mouth. So I would say talk to colleagues, look at listservs. They've been very active for like specialty societies, particularly if you're in a specialty and you really want, you know, you have some nuances that might dictate a specific product for your specialty, your state medical societies. You can do an internet search, but I actually find the best thing to do is to ask colleagues. Now, I will say, Drew, though, that the easiest part maybe the platform. Actually, the more difficult part is the workflow. Like, who will answer the phone? How are you going to explain all this to patients? They're used to seeing you in person. What is the meaning of all this? Are you going to see new patients? Are you just going to see established patients? Will you still see in-person visits? Are you moving everything to telemedicine? And then what is your scheduling template going to look like? And then, by the way, how are you going to register patients, collect consents, insurance cards, etc. Now, I don't mean this in any manner to be a comprehensive list, but I think it pays to sit down and just kind of think about, like, what is my workflow in the office? And then what should it look like when my patients aren't standing there in person? And quite often, of course, my team, my staff isn't standing there in person. And if I may, a couple of like best practices that I've heard from physicians is to definitely sign up every patient on your portal, because this avoids that telephone tag afterwards, especially since you aren't seeing the patient in person. A lot of the portals now have electronic signatures. You can upload insurance cards, so that can kind of take care of that. And then the other best practice I've heard is, okay, so there's going to be no-shows, right? You have this telemedicine. The patient may not be able to like get their video to work. So another great best practice is to have your MA or your nurse actually initiate the visit. And maybe they can perform like the clinical intake or rooming, you know, ask the patient about medications, if they have a home blood pressure monitor, ask for their BP, et cetera. But this really kills two birds with one stone, because now instead of you're sitting there trying to figure out is the patient going to show up? Do they have the right technology? You are ready. Know that when you're seeing the patient is going to be ready for you. So definitely, you know, just thought I would mention those two best practices from a workflow perspective. So in some, I think the platform is actually one of the easiest decisions. What really is something you need to work through is the workflow.
So you've chosen your telemedicine platform, you've planned out your workflow strategies. What's next? Before you jump right into telemedicine, consider whether or not the services you plan to perform can actually be reimbursed.
Well, definitely we can get reimbursed. And so I kind of like think about this as what's going on at the federal government level. And they've kind of issued a, well, who can practice telemedicine and who can't. But what's interesting, like reimbursement for medicine in general, this is a web of complexity because there's what's going on at the federal level, and then each individual payer almost has different policies about who can perform what services remotely and what those services actually entail. This actually may be a good time to bring up the fact that telemedicine is actually only one of a series of digital services that can actually be provided today. So telemedicine has a specific definition, two-way interactive audio-visual. So again, two-way interactive audio-visual. And sometimes you'll see the government add the term real-time as well. But actually, there are lots of other services that can be rendered and paid that are not technically telemedicine. You see, historically, telemedicine was only allowed for patients who were in a healthcare professional shortage area. That is, there weren't enough doctors available, so they were able to, or they were able to see physicians who could bill, you know, from the cities, if you will, for those patients. But obviously, it was pretty restricted. So now we have services that are telemedicine, and they kind of blew up. I say they, the federal government said, listen, a patient could be anywhere. But in addition to telemedicine, we actually have e-visits, remote patient monitoring, and virtual visits. So I like kind of think about these collectively as digital services. And the key really factor in determining which of these is how they are delivered. So for example, if you service a patient over the portal, you can look at the codes for e-visits or virtual visits, but you can't bill telemedicine because it doesn't fit within that two-way interactive audiovisual definition. And of course, the other factor is what is delivered, what services that is. And that's where I would actually suggest looking at the CPT codes themselves to determine. And in fact, I should mention that the American Medical Association has an amazing fact sheet that kind of goes through the different scenarios and offers you guidance about who can bill for it and what they can bill for. So that's something I would highly recommend to physicians.
Now that you know that you can get reimbursed for these services, the next thing you need to consider is how to set up payments for these services at your practice. Up next, Elizabeth walks through what this setup might look like at your practice.
Let's take a look at telemedicine first. For Medicare, there's actually more than 200 codes now that can be delivered over telemedicine. So your traditional evaluation management codes like 99213, or even annual wellness visits. And interestingly enough, they are paid at the in-person rates. So let's say you got paid $75 for 99213, which was kind of a very close to the national payment rate from Medicare. That's what you'll get from telemedicine. So that's awesome. But for the other digital services, and CMS actually uses the term communication-based technology services, or CTBS. I know, we need another acronym. But from a Medicare perspective, they kind of range from about $12 to $15, and the highest you're going to get is like $50 to $60. So, you know, I'm not going to list off all the particular reimbursement, but you can just tell from my example that it is definitely more favorable for you to actually bill for a telemedicine visit. Now, I'm giving those figures from a Medicare perspective, but each payer has, of course, their own fee schedule, and you'd want to look to them to see what's the most conducive for you, and of course, to be compliant, to actually render the services appropriately from a coding perspective.
In setting up your services, you might wonder, do certain services performed via telemedicine cost more than others? Here's what Elizabeth had to say.
Well, interesting that you asked that, because just on April 11th, the federal government issued a policy. And this was really fascinating to me, because not only are they saying any services that are provided related to COVID-19 or that which a COVID-19 test was ordered are covered at full, no cost share. Patient don't have any co-payments, et cetera, but they've dictated to private payers to do the same. So basically that to me was kind of like, okay, we have the landscape of what's COVID related, and that looks like it's going to be no cost share, no co-payment, no co-insurance from Medicare or private payers. But then we kind of trickle down into private payers. So like me, I'm a a Cigna patient. So if I called my internist today and had a sinus infection, I still have to pay a co-payment. Interestingly enough, if I was an Aetna patient, Aetna has actually decided to waive all co-payments. So it depends.
Unfortunately, the "it depends" aspect of telemedicine service and payer reimbursement does not end there. Payers may have additional requirements for who can and cannot perform telehealth services in order for you to receive payment. Elizabeth's advice on determining what individuals can perform which services is to go to CMS's website, because even at the time that we spoke, CMS's regulations were changing by the day. Elizabeth also offered similar advice regarding licensure. At the time, physicians were just recently granted the ability to work across state lines. However, Elizabeth says that since licensure is controlled by the states, physicians operating across state lines via telemedicine should keep a watch on the Federation of State Medical Boards' website, where they retain updated information for all 50 states and U.S. territories. Elizabeth did offer some final advice about the pandemic situation and the rise of new telemedicine services and related regulations.
Personally, this is one of those situations, and I'm an optimistic person by nature, where we have to kind of think about, this is either like we're going down or we're going to make some lemonade out of lemons. And I know that's really a trite analogy at the moment, but I think things are shifting like literally in front of our eyes. I really think there's two important narratives going on. Number one, we've been complaining, me particularly, about regulations since forever. I've been working in healthcare since the early 1990s. I know I've been a big complainer. And basically, it's a blank slate. HIPAA, privacy, you name the regulation, and I could tell you how it's changed. We just have this amazing opportunity. And then secondly, our patients are probably never going to go back to the days of calling us, waiting months for an appointment, waiting hours in our waiting room. So like, we've got to think about this thing like, okay, the regulations have sort of gone away. What can we do to be innovative here? Our patients are going to be thinking about different ways that we are delivering medicine today. I'm afraid we may never be able to go back to the old ways. So we can kind of take, two paths, and I would encourage us to think about how we can create a path that our patients and our industry can really go down together in a good way.
Thank you again, Elizabeth, for your insights and advice on telemedicine, reimbursements, and regulations. And thank you all for listening to Perspectives, brought to you by Physicians Practice. We hope you subscribe or listen to podcasts, rate us, and let us know what topics you would like to hear more about. For more practice management insights from the top experts in the field, be sure to visit us at physicianspractice.com and sign up for our newsletter. We'll see you again in 2 weeks.